There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I'm all set. I'm all totally ready to go.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here for checking out the episode. I do hope you hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around. You do that, I'll give you 3 brand new interviews every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So you can keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can, of course, grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget also, if you can, give the series a rating, leave a review. If you feel so inspired, that always helps out so much, because we've had some great guests on lately, including just recently Spike Ferriston. He co-wrote the Netflix film Unfrosted with Jerry Seinfeld. We had Brent Smith of Shinedown here, documentarian Sarah Dowlin behind Sue Bird and The Clutch, Katie Crutchfield of Waxahachie, Kevin Bacon and the Bacon Brothers, Scoot McNairy. He stars opposite Kit Harington in Blood for Dust, Mike McCready and Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, Dave Wakeling of The English Beat, Beth Ditto of Gossip. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, my buddy Maya Hawk. In fact, you're going to get her twice this month. You know, she has an album coming out at the end of May 31st called Chaos Angel. We'll be doing an interview about that later in the month. But right now, she has a brand new movie. It's called Wildcats, co-starring Laura Linney and Steve Zahn, among others, and directed by her pop, Ethan Hawke, and mostly shot all around me here in Louisville and other parts of Kentucky. So the film Wildcat, it's both a biopic about the novelist Flannery O'Connor, as well as a showcase of her Southern Gothic short stories. And Maya's going to tell us how reading O'Connor in high school left a lasting impression that eventually led to passing along the author's prayer journal to her dad before the pair eventually decided to adapt her story into a film, as well as the decision to play multiple characters in the movie, and of course the big topics, things like racism and white hypocrisy that the movie tackles. Maya is going to go on to reveal how she found the voice and rhythm of Flannery O'Connor, how this type of writing has a connection to songwriting, and the possibility of the industry being on the cusp of a new era for indie movies like this. All that and more, we're talking Wildcats. It's Kyle Meredith with Maya Hawk.
It's good to see you.
So here we are. Wildcat is finally out. And
yeah.
What a fantastic, I mean, seriously, Lizzie, this has been in my world, of course, for as long, not as long as it's been in your world, but almost, because you shot it here in Kentucky and we've been talking about it a little bit, but I finally got to watch it. And, you know, don't even know what my expectations were, but it is so good. The last time you and I talked, you said, I think what you said was, I don't know if you'll like it, but you'll have fun talking about it. And I want to say how much I love it first. So let's just...
Oh, good. Well, that's a huge win. I feel like the people liking things is not as important as them being interested in things, but I still like it when people like stuff. It's still good.
So let's just start out the easy place. What is the journey to this movie?
Journey to this movie is her book of short stories was assigned in my English class in the 10th grade. And I wanted to do a little extracurricular reading, so I got her prayer journal. And then my dad was shooting this movie, Magnificent Seven, over the summer, and I was visiting him. And I'd kind of gotten really obsessed with the prayer journal and was really moved by it. And I know my dad is a closet Christian. And all I mean by that is that he's in no way an overt practicing religious person. Like, we didn't go to church every Sunday or anything like that, but his family is very religious. And he, I think, has often sort of combined different sort of Eastern and more spiritual teachings with kind of imagery and mythology from Christianity, because it's so deep in his roots and it's been a kind of guiding light for him. And so I thought that, you know, I was this young, ambitious girl and found this kind of commonality between Flannery and I, and she was struggling with her faith and her faith's relationship to the arts. And so I thought it would be a good ground for us to meet on. So we read it together and then ended up editing it together into my Juilliard audition monologue. And then I just kind of got it in my head that I wanted to play this part. So I tried to hunt down the rights for a couple years and didn't get anywhere. And then I just started talking in the press about how I wanted to find the rights, thinking that maybe, you know, that would be the way to get the message to whoever had them, if I couldn't get them in the normal ways. And so it worked. And then he reached out, this guy named Joe Goodman, and he not only had the rights to her prayer journal, but to all of her letters and all her short stories, barring two. And so we, you know, got to work on trying to make this happen. And kind of simultaneously, while that was going on, my dad was having a moment of kind of spiritual crisis, of feeling like in his early 20s, he'd done a lot of work developing his spiritual life and then had kind of left it there and not worked on it any further. But then he had this epiphany that actually the way that he practiced his faith was through making art, that that was its own kind of practice and routine and connection to something larger than yourself. And so we kind of decided that we wanted to make a movie about that through the guise of Flannery's life and words and letters. And so I asked him if he would consider writing that script and working with Joe and the team to do a part for me that would be kind of a poem about faith through art. And then it weirdly just kind of everything kept going right with it, to the point to which it happened. You know, I think we'd had a couple other projects we wanted to do together that everything was going wrong with that we thought were a slam dunk. And then this one, we were like, well, no one's going to want to make this, but we'll try. And it happened.
I will always admit to being slow to the finish line about my own brain a lot of times. And, I'm telling you how much I like the movie. Because I enjoyed, because I learned a lot about Flannery. I didn't know much. I haven't read Flannery. But I was an altar boy up until I was about 12 or 13 and stopped going. I left Catholic Church altogether and never looked back. And here I am in Kentucky, which is not exactly the South, but it's close. It's basically, it's the gateway to the South. And suddenly I realized, because the stories that you are telling through Flannery and her stories about religion, about the South, like, these are the conversations that I'm still having with my family.
Yeah.
Sometimes some very racist moments, you know, surrounding us around here. And just that style of not just the racism, but the religion and everything, that style of thinking that still holds true. Like, you're still telling a very present day story.
Well, I think that that's exactly what we ended up deciding. You know, we had a big, for lack of a better term, come to Jesus conversation about, you know, Flannery's racism, but also her, you know, writing about white hypocrisy and how those things were so complicated and convoluted. And in many ways, you know, she wrote better about white racism than almost any white writer has, you know. But she also, maybe part of the reason why she has that perspective on it is because she was so stewed in it and grown up in it. But, you know, this history of America, if you try to tell it or talk about any of our past and whitewash out the racism, you're lying and, you know, telling a fictitious tale of an imaginary country. And, you know, it seems like in some ways there's only two sides of this opinion right now, one of which is we have to hold on to our pride, keep our statues, you know, people who drive around with the Confederate flag on their cars, and people who are like, you know, all of that has to be annihilated. We've got to take Flannery's name off of buildings, and, you know, that we can't talk about any of that anymore. And it feels like the right path. I mean, not that people don't have this idea. There is this third contingent, which is like, we need to study our history, take what was valuable from it, try to use the mistakes of the past to correct for the future, and acknowledge, you know, and if we can't make a movie about Flannery or be in conversation with Flannery in a modern way, what are we all supposed to do as white Americans with any of our grandparents or ourselves for that matter?
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Maya Hawk.
The way you all did it, because as people will see, you know, this isn't your standard biopic by any means. I mean, we do get a snapshot of this one moment of her life, you know, where she is falling ill and she's coming back home. But you tell it through all of these short stories of hers that are weaved in and out with you playing and Laura Linney every time, you know, you're playing these multiple. When you're playing those characters, how important was it to have Flannery's DNA, or was it at all?
Really important. I mean, I think, you know, one thing we were trying to avoid was the SNL sketch vibe, where it felt like, and now you're going to watch Maya and Laura act. You know, we didn't want it to feel like that. We really wanted the aspect of it that's a personal portrait is trying to dramatize the creative experience and trying to kind of show in some visual way what it feels like to have an idea for a story or a song or whatever it is, you know, that, you know, she could see the hat on the train and let her mind go wild and develop a whole story based around that hat and that billboard, you know, just those two details built a whole story for her and her world. And so I think that that, you know, is the poetic portrait aspect of it. But yeah, I wanted the way that you are in a dream was my goal. You know, how you can recognize yourself in a dream, and sometimes you're somebody else. You're like, whoa, I'm me, but I'm actually my mother in this moment in this dream, or what, I'm actually my neighbor, or I think I'm me. I can't really control what's happening, but I kind of know I'm dreaming. Ah, you know, that sort of feeling of dream state creativity is what we were looking for. And we wanted to feel both the character of Regina and the character of Flannery blurring, not the actors transforming, the characters blurring into these other people.
Beautifully surreal. There was a quote, I think one of you all said, your dad, in another interview, fiction is plunging into reality.
It's a Flannery quote. I think it opens the movie.
Oh, that's what I get for not notating my own notes there.
No, it's all right. Yeah, but fiction is not an escape from reality, but rather a plunge into reality. And yeah, I think that that's kind of another aspect of the thesis, which is that we tell stories not as a, you know, a dilettantish fun activity. You tell stories to save your life. You know, we make stories of our life so that we can survive it. And some of us make up crazy stories about the things that aren't even in our lives so that we can survive our lives, but that it's a necessity in order to participate in reality, not an escape from it.
As far as the way we treat writers too, and beyond what you were saying earlier about, you know, problematic moments of their past, but like the way we romanticize them, you know, writers in the 50s, writers of any decade, I think we romanticize them. But it's interesting because, you know, looking at this moment in Flannery's life, you know, I'm sure she wasn't feeling romantic at all.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, of all the writers you could play, like, there's not a lot of like cool guys smoking cigarettes in a bar, getting into a fist fight and eating your novel. You know, like, there's not a lot of moments like that. And Flannery herself said that no one was ever going to do a biography of her because there would be nothing to write about. And frankly, we struggled with that initially. You know, I part of why I brought my dad this idea was I was like, I don't have an idea. Like, I know I want to play this character. I have no idea what snapshot of her life is interesting. Like, if we do her at Yaddo, we might as well just go off on a journey with the Fitzgeralds. Like, it's like, you know, find Flannery would be a better side character in someone else's movie than a character in her own movie. You know, if you dive deeply into any of the other characters in this movie, you would find a larger story that could have been told. Like, You know, Phil's character, Robert Lowell, like there would be an amazing story you could tell about him, or even Regina, you know, there's like, but Flannery is kind of the boringest, but it opened up this door to make a movie about the imagination. And her life was simple and confined and stuck, like the lives of so many women in that era and time period, but also compounded by her disease.
Was there a process to finding her voice and rhythm?
Oh, yeah. I worked with this amazing voice coach, Kate Wilson, that I've been working with for ages, who I just love and admire. And she, you know, some voice coaches really try to like break you down and build you up, and she just builds you up and makes you feel better. But so I worked with her on kind of getting the dialect right. And, but really the biggest, you know, advantage was that Flannery has a recording of her doing A Good Man Is Hard to Find. And so we really worked from that, but then tried to make her a little bit more legible, because you know, it's not fun watching a movie being like, what are they saying? What are they saying? Even though so many people watch movies these days with the subtitles on, even when it's in English, but I don't want people doing that. I think that's crazy. So we tried to kind of make it more comprehensible, because Flannery herself was notoriously difficult to understand.
It was cool, because you can find, like, I can tell the rhythm there that you're hitting. And it's also fun, like, again, when you're switching characters, because I would imagine, you know, we were talking about the DNA earlier, but you would have had to have found, I guess, a different rhythm every single time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's like a similar rhythm. Basically, I just played with the accent and whether or not to make it stronger or weaker. You know, I essentially, the only changes that I made with the different characters was kind of hicking it up and unhicking it, you know?
Yes, I do know, actually. Yes. I've had to get rid of my rats and my eyes and everything. Yeah, through the years. So it's
oh, I wish you'd left your rats and eyes. I love those rats and eyes.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Maya Hawk. What is it? I was of course looking for the threads when they're not even meant to be there, but there's the quote, I have to write to discover what I'm doing, and I don't know what I think till I see what I say. And I thought, well, that's songwriting right there. That's half the time of a song, right?
Totally. I mean, I think I was really musically inspired by studying her as a writer. And, you know, even the title for my new album coming out came from working on this movie. I think it is songwriting. I mean, you have to write to see what you've said. And then once you do, you have to say it all over again. And it sounds like a chorus to me.
Put a melody to it and stamp it out.
Yeah.
I seriously, you know, I've obviously we've talked about music a lot of the times. So we've talked about acting a little bit of the time. And I enjoy both sides of your worlds there. This is something like the depths that you went to in your acting, I feel like is a new watermark that I've seen from you. And it was so good. And
thank you.
These types of movies, because I feel like, I don't know, maybe because I'm looking for them, maybe because it's post-strike and everything else, that there's this opportunity for weird indie to sort of creep back up in those ways. From your point of view, inside the industry, is that perception feel accurate to you?
You know, I feel like the industry, you know, technology has done this thing where, you know, the generations are getting so much shorter. And what I mean by that is like movements and shifts of vibe and tone seem to be happening in more like 3 to 5 year chunks and less, 10 to 30 year chunks. And I think that I have no idea what's happening. Between the pandemic and the strike and the rise of streaming and the kind of reckoning of streaming at the same time, I have no idea. I just wouldn't begin to be able to make any predictions. I hope that there's a space for independent film. I hope people go back to the theater. I hope that the people who can choose to invest in unique original material and not just IP and canonical reboots. I hope. We'll see.
Well, as if we keep getting more movies like this, I'm going to be in heaven. So it's please keep making more.
I'll do my very best.
It's all up to you. And of course, the album coming out too. That interview is coming later this month. You already know how I feel about that. I'm looking forward to. Are you going to have time to tour at all this year?
Not this year, because we're shooting Stranger Things out here in Atlanta. So the only thing I'm looking forward to Stranger Things ending is being able to tour my record. Other than that, it's a total heartbreak. But so I think I do a couple shows, one in Atlanta, two in Nashville, for as release shows, but that's it.
All right. Nashville's not far from me. Hopefully I'll see that. So
maybe you can come. That'd be awesome.
I'll be down there. Wildcat is a beautiful movie. Congrats on it again. And congrats to the whole crew. I didn't even compliment Steve Zahn. It was great seeing him in there.
Oh, God, isn't he just delicious?
He was so good. And you like him even when you don't, every single time. You know?
I know. Even as an unlikable character, he's like, but that guy's kind of fun to hang out with, huh? It's kind of great.
It's always so great talking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Much appreciated.
My thanks to Maya Hawk. Wildcats out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get all these new interviews just like this one sent to you. 3 a week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please, again, if you feel so inspired, give the series a rating, leave a review as well. And then after all that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Julie London, Dramarama, The Staves, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Cramps, The Donnas, Elastica, Blur, Information Society, Morcheeba, The Pogues, Janis Joplin, The White Stripes, Norah Jones, Father John Misty, Hozier, Patti Griffin, Bruce Springsteen, The Gaslight Anthem, and my conversation with William Reed of the Jesus and Mary Chain. Again, that's just an example of what you can hear every weeknight starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith, and I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Getting ready to go do a little night shooting out here in Atlanta.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.